Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, October. No, it's not October. Why would I say October? Wow.
October 2016, of course.
Of course. Now, but it is Friday, and it's Friday the 13th, and it's Friday the 13th in January 2017. Where did October? Anyhow, maybe I want to dress up in costumes or something. That must be it. So anyhow, John Martellaro, how are you today?
I'm good. Nice to be here.
It's good to have you here again today, 2 days in a row where we get to do just our own thing here. So that'll be fun. Also fun, Blue Apron is our sponsor. So we'll be talking about them and the really good meals that they send out to you in the mail soon. But first, John, I need to give people a little bit of a backstory before I drop a question on you. And here's the backstory. Consumer Reports did their review of the Touch Bar MacBook Pro and said, we can't recommend this computer because the battery life fluctuates on this thing so radically that something is clearly wrong. It ranges from 3 hours to 19 hours or something like that. You know, like really radically weird. And Apple's like, hey, something's wrong here because that's not right. And it turns out that Consumer Reports was going in and shutting off the browser cache for Safari. And one of the tests they do is to download a set of web pages over and over. So what they did was they set up the computer so that it's being used in a way that most people will never use, and most people don't even realize you can do.
And they do this with all their notebooks they test, not just the MacBook. It's a standard test.
Right. Yeah, and it's weird because it's a very unnatural test. It's not a real-world test of how these computers perform. So in the process of doing this, it turns out there's a bug in that part of the developer code that's used for shutting off the Safari cache. And it hadn't really shown up before, but once Apple realized it was there, they fixed it. Consumer Reports redoes their tests, and they're like, holy crap, you can get almost 19 hours off the battery on a MacBook Pro. We totally recommend this computer. And so they've gone from very odd and unrealistic battery performance to very odd and unrealistic battery performance. And the big changes have gone from saying we can't recommend this computer to we do recommend this computer. And my question is, why should I trust that Consumer Reports is actually competent to test a computer and tell people if it's worth buying?
Well, it's good that Consumer Reports goes through the process of acquiring machines and sitting down and having standardized processes, even though they may not be realistic, to test relative battery life amongst the machines they test. So that's good because they sit down and they take their time and they do these tests that a lot of us don't have the patience to do or the wherewithal to acquire a lot of different computers. So that's good. Another thing that's good out of this is that Apple responded right away to an important publication's response to this kind of standardized testing. And Apple looked into it and got logs and took a look at what was going on and found the problem, which benefits all of us. So there's good things that came out of it. And I saw one comment that was sort of quizzical about why Apple worries about Consumer Reports, but they should, because Consumer Reports has a strong voice. And they often, in the past, have exhibited a lack of severe and deep knowledge about Apple products, which leads them to make assertions or observations that the technical community thinks are a little bit shallow or uninformed. So they've gotten kind of a bad rap on that. But that shouldn't take away from this recent effort to uncover the source of this battery issue, because a lot of people were having that problem And it was sporadic, and we didn't know what was going on. And you, I asked you about it, and you said, "Well, I'm not having any problems with the battery life on my new
MacBook Pro with Touch Bar. Amazing."
So when we have these kinds of inconsistent results, it makes you wonder whether it's a manufacturing issue or not. And so getting to the bottom of this was very helpful. And I'm glad it all worked out. And I'm glad Apple was responsive rather than callous about the situation and saying, well, it's just you guys.
I'm totally with you on that. And yet, I look at the whole process, and my takeaway is Consumer Reports cannot give me a rating on a computer that I feel I can trust.
Well, they definitely have a different perspective.
You are so charitable.
As I said before, they have to look at washing machines. They have to look at car radios. They have to look at electric mixers and Cuisinarts. And so they have to develop, broad consumerish principles that they think people would be interested in knowing about. And so they have to be forgiven a little bit for not being ultimately deep. There are other resources. There are sites that will tear down one of these machines, an Antech or an iFixit and other Macintosh related sites that go into great detail. And so that information is out there, and it's available to people who want to dig deep. But
sure.
Many times,
my dad isn't going to find that.
That's right.
He's just going to go to Consumer Reports.
That's right. That's right. Because many people don't have the time, so they pick what they think is the best balance between trustworthiness and technical competence. And hey, Consumer Reports got to the bottom of this, caused Apple to be concerned enough to get to the bottom of it. So I see it as all a win-win for everybody.
I still think you're being really charitable. I mean, I'm looking at this and I'm like, seriously?
I've seen some stuff in Consumer Reports in the past that's given me pause and going, well, weren't we all born knowing that stuff? Come on, guys.
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally fine going to Consumer Reports for recommendation on a vacuum cleaner, a washing machine, appliances like that. But as far as computers go, I've always been a little skeptical of their results, but after this, I just feel like I can't tell people to go to Consumer Reports when they need to buy a computer.
Well, let me put it in perspective if you have a minute.
Okay.
There was a time when Mac OS X becoming OS X becoming Mac OS. Mm-hmm. Was clearly superior to Vista. And Vista was a mess.
Oh, boy, howdy.
Before that, Windows XP was a bigger mess. And so, technically, in terms of the quality of the Unix operating system, FreeBSD and under the hood on the Macs, there was clear technical superiorities. And so, when Consumer Reports didn't come out in a glowing fashion, as Walt Mossberg did when he was with the Wall Street Journal, and punctuate that superiority, what they were doing was looking at it from a consumer perspective. Lots of people use Windows. Windows is used in the workplace. Windows is used at home. People use Windows productively, and they get work done, even though it's not technically awesome. And so we looked askance at Consumer Reports and said, my goodness, you guys are not in touch with the highest level of technical understanding of these two operating systems. But they had their viewpoint that, consumers use both operating systems and they use them both productively. And so let's treat this with balance. Mm-hmm. But now the situation has kind of changed a little bit. I think Windows 10 has come a long, long way. And in terms of security and usability, there's still some silliness going on. But Windows 10 is a decent, competent, secure alternative to the Mac OS X. So it's kind of come full circle in that regard. And so I think we got that attitude about Consumer Reports that kind of lingers on to today. But whenever I thought about that, I thought about, well, thank goodness there's somebody who's sort of taking a non-fanatic viewpoint and trying to reflect the interests of the consumers as well. So it's a double-edged sword.
It's definitely a double-edged sword. All right. So since it's clear you and I are going to have to disagree like gentlemen, I'm going to ask our listeners, what do you think? Am I right to be as skeptical as I am of Consumer Reports' competency when rating computers? Or is John right that that this is actually a really good thing and it's benefiting all of us? Let me know. And you can shoot me messages on Twitter. That would be at TMO Daily. You can shoot me emails, observations@MacObserver.com. And you can leave comments in the show notes on the Mac Observer website. I'll check all those places to see what you have to say. And I'm really curious what everyone thinks about this. It's pretty clear how I feel about it, but I really do want to know what everyone else thinks. All right, so I mentioned we have a sponsor today, and that sponsor is Blue Apron, and I think it's pretty cool that Blue Apron is sponsoring the show, because what they do is they make it easy for us to expand our culinary palates. So what they've done is they've come up with these really great recipes, and then they package them together with all the ingredients, the fresh ingredients that you need to make the recipe, and then they send it out to you so you can put it together yourself and cook it yourself. And they give you these really nice recipe cards that have the graphics and everything. So even if you're not sure what a specific ingredient is, that's okay. You have a picture, and now you can match it up with what's in the box they sent out to you, and there you go. Now you can make your food. And I think that's great, because there's so many people that just get in a rut and they have the same thing all the time. And it's not because they're afraid to try something new, but it's just easy when we're so busy to just do what you've always done. So what Blue Apron is doing is making it easy for you to try other things. So they have a package where you get three meals for two people. You can do a family version also, so it'd be four people. But three meals for two people, and it has everything for all three meals just delivered to you fresh, and then you can just make what you want. And if you don't like something that's on that week's list, that's okay, because some people, like me, are kind of finicky about what we eat, and so sometimes they'll have something that comes up in the menu where I'm like, yeah, that's not going in my mouth. But that's okay, because then I can pick something else from the week's options. And that means I'm always going to get stuff that interests me in some way. So that's really cool. And what they're doing is making it easy for you to see if I'm right, because you can get three free meals for two, delivered to you, and you don't even pay shipping. So here's what you do. You need to go to the Blue Apron website, and that's blueapron.com/TDO. blueapron.com/TDO, and place your order for your meals. Even if you were paying for it, it'd still be a great deal, because it's less than $10 per person per meal, and you can't go out and eat a good meal for that. Actually, most places you can't even eat a crappy meal for that. But here you go. Three free meals delivered to your door for free. Fresh ingredients, really good food, awesome recipes that you can hold on to and make again if you want to go to the grocery store and pick out the stuff yourself. And it's a really great way to try new things and be the awesome person you are when you invite someone over and say, look at this awesome meal I just made. And they're going to love you. and everyone deserves a little love. Anyhow, blueapron.com/TDO. Go pick up your free three meals for two and eat up, because their stuff is really nice. So thank you to Blue Apron for being our sponsor.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So, John, I wanted you on the show today because, of course, I valued your opinion that I disagree with about Consumer Reports, but it's no secret that you're pretty excited about televisions, about 4K, and about what Apple could be doing with Apple TV, and they just made a big change. So apps that developers create for Apple TV, so that would be for tvOS, which is a variation of iOS that's on the iPhone and iPad, instead of being limited to 200 megabytes for the app file size, that cap has been pushed up to 4 gigabytes. So now Apple TV apps can be the same overall size as their iOS and iPad counterparts. And that means that we should be able to see apps that are much more robust, have more interesting interfaces, are much more capable than what we're seeing on Apple TV today. And those apps can have, I think it's up to 20 gigabytes of downloadable content to go along with them. So you can get a big app and then have all this other content that, as it's needed, can be downloaded for the app. So it can be even ultimately bigger than what's stored on your Apple TV. And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, okay, so Apple was very conservative at first because they weren't sure how much of that storage in the fourth generation Apple TV they were going to need for the things they're doing. They also weren't sure how many apps people would really be installing. So they put a really restrictive cap in place. And now that they know that people aren't loading maybe as many apps as they thought,
right,
they have a lot more leeway with what they're doing, so they can push that cap up. And I think the other thing is that this means that developers that have compelling apps on iOS already can now finally bring their apps to Apple TV, and they didn't want to before because they would have to rewrite the whole thing to accommodate the storage restrictions that Apple had in place. Now they don't have to deal with that, and it will be much easier and practical for them to port their apps over to Apple TV. And
I think you've nailed it. I think the initial viewpoint from Apple was is that we wanted to make sure we had plenty of overhead available for lots of different apps, mm-hmm. because Tim Cook had come out and said that, you know, the future of TV is apps. And I think what happened was that the same thing happened on the TV as happened on the phone. And that is, there is this sort of culture understanding that people don't necessarily buy thousands of apps for their phones. They tend to dwindle down and have a favorite dozen or two dozen at most. Mm-hmm. And so I think after, because Apple has this feedback mechanism, they can see what's happening with their products. I think Apple looked for a while and they said, well, look, we need to have some overhead here for future development. We want to encourage more games on these devices. We've noticed that people are not necessarily running a whole lot of different apps on their TV, on their Apple TV. So let's make it easier for these developers to do really exciting games. And the other thing I hadn't thought of before until you triggered me this morning in this discussion was and this is just a surmise, it's off the cuff, is I think when people play games, they tend to sit closer to their TV than when they watch video. In the video, you sit back on the couch and you're fine. But when you're playing games, you're probably right there at the coffee table, only a couple meters away from the display. And that's where 4K kicks in. Mm-hmm. Because as we know, on a 65-inch display, if you're closer than about 2 meters, you can take advantage of the resolution. If you're not, then you don't see the difference. It's called the retina effect, as we know. Mm-hmm. So this could all be part of, as you said in the article today, planning for exciting 4K high-resolution games where people sit close and they want to have photorealistic images and games. And it's just part of making the developer people happier, and maybe planning for the days when we have a new fifth generation 4K Apple TV with HDR and 128 gigabytes of RAM, maybe. So maybe Apple's putting the pieces into place slowly. I like your theory.
Yeah, and why? Well, thank you. And I think that when 4K does finally come to Apple TV, it's not going to be a software update on the fourth generation model. That's not going to happen. It will be a brand new model. So we'll have a fifth generation Apple TV that does 4K. And I think a lot of what's happening right now is just the buildup. We're in the precursor phase to a new Apple TV with 4K support. And this is just part of the path to that new device.
One of the decisions that Apple was going to face when coming out with a 4K Apple TV fifth generation is whether they're going to include HDR10, which is the standard high dynamic range technology as defined by the UHD Alliance, or whether they're going to also include as well Dolby Vision, which is popular in some circles, and some blockbuster movies have been filmed in Dolby Vision. Mm-hmm. And the new Sony TVs that were announced at CES have both HDR and Dolby Vision. And the new LGs have both as well. So and Dolby Vision requires a special chip that's under license from Dolby. So there's additional hardware that Apple would have to include that's not in the current Apple TVs. So there's a decision that Apple's going to have to make about the future-proofing and the gee whiz golly coolness of the fifth generation Apple TV. And if they do decide to include Dolby Vision, that means a whole new device with that additional chip under license. So that's something to keep an eye on.
So we just need to watch and see if reports start showing up saying Apple is buying up these chips.
Well, The politics will be interesting. If they decide to bypass Dolby Vision and other companies like Roku and Amazon embrace it, then Apple's placed themselves at an interesting competitive disadvantage. Why do that? Why go to all that trouble to not be the best? Why not be competitive and have the coolest, greatest thing? I mean, people buy Apple products because they're known for being state-of-the-art and pushing the limits and having the best. So we would hope that Apple would include both HDR10 and Dolby Vision in any new product. And if they don't, there's going to be a lot of gnashing of teeth.
And I bet you will be sitting across the studio from me, wailing and gnashing.
I'll be the gnasher in chief.
Yes. We'll put that on your new business cards. John Martellaro, okay. Gnasher of teeth. And we're out of time. Chief. Yes. So we need to wrap up.
Okay.
Thanks for being here today, John.
Very welcome.
It's always great to have you here, and I like when we get to do these little focused discussions like this, and it's just great to have you here. And thank you to Blue Apron for being our sponsor all week. Head over to their website, blueapron.com/TDO. Get your three free meals with free shipping, and just be amazed when you get all these fresh ingredients that show up right on your door. Quality food. I think you're going to like this. blueapron.com/TDO. So go eat, because I don't like it when you guys are hungry. Listeners, thank you for joining us. We will see everyone again on Monday.